May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice. Justices, good morning. Paul Wallace on behalf of the appellant, the State of Delaware, in this case. In this case, the Superior Court found that, and there really is no argument, that David Abel was justifiably stopped for speeding. He's going 80 in a 55-mile-an-hour zone. There's no question that he could ask certain questions as he processed Mr. Abel for the purposes of investigating, to the extent there is an investigation of the traffic offense, asking him the questions like, where are you going, things like that, that one would normally ask. The question here is whether or not he violated his Fourth Amendment rights when before he turned his back to take himself back to his car, he asked him, do you have any weapons? The Superior Court said yes. Mr. Abel still says yes. The state suggests absolutely not. This was a reasonable inquiry by a police officer under the circumstances that faced him there on 95 to ensure that he could continue doing what he was doing, writing a ticket for a traffic offense, and do it in safety.
Is there any significance to the fact he asked the question, do you have a weapon, and the answer was no, twice?
Well, he asked, do you have weapons, and the guy said no, and he said, no guns? And the guy said, no. And he said, I will patch it, you can watch the tape. If the court has not watched the tape before, or watched the DVD, I suggest watch this DVD. Nothing speaks about more volumes about exactly what he's doing, and that is not on a fishing expedition to look for guns. He's not looking for other criminality. If he was doing that, why not ask
just to help you structure your argument, we have seen it.
Okay. I suggest no. I think he had a reasonable suspicion on all the circumstances, and there's questions as to whether or not a police officer can take into consideration the fact that somebody happens to be part of an outlaw motorcycle gang in enemy territory, and you happen to be a trained DSP intelligence officer who knows precisely that you are going to be far more likely to be carrying weapons, in fact, in those circumstances, and that's probably why he would ask the questions exactly the way he did.
So there could have been anybody on this bike. As long as they were wearing the Hell's Angels jacket, you're saying the search would be justified?
I'm saying that question certainly. First of all, I don't know that you need a separate and distinct justification simply to ask that question in the circumstances in which he is. A police officer is there on the roadside, and it's a very short interaction. It's not as if the traffic stop has ended. It's not as the Murray situation that the court dealt with and spoke of, and other circumstances where there's a clear end to the traffic investigation. He has a motorcyclist. He explained himself on the stand that motorcyclists, when you are a police officer, pose different dangers, and that is, unlike a driver where you have barriers and you can step behind and come up at an angle so they can't get the angle on you, once you turn your back on them and go back to your car, you're in a much more vulnerable position. They're already in a standing position, and there's nothing to use as that barricade to ensure your safety. So I suggest he doesn't even have to ask that.
The answer is no to do you have a weapon, any guns. What is the further fact that creates the articulable suspicion that nevertheless he may have been armed?
Well, I'd suggest respectfully he doesn't need one, Your Honor. That he doesn't need an articulable suspicion. Now, if he had actually, before he laid hands on him and patted him down, I would suggest he would have needed it. But there's this intervening situation, and that is Mr. Abel says, all right, I do. I got two guns on me.
He did that, didn't he? Because the officer said, I'm going to pat you down.
Yes, he did.
So if he did it as a result of a Terry search that's about to happen, doesn't the Terry search have to be warranted?
Well, I suggest, Your Honor, it's only words at that point. And if, in fact, someone during the course of a custodial interrogation can be told something that is untrue, that then prompts them to give forth evidence against them, the same thing can happen in that circumstance. The police officer had done nothing at that point, but said, I will search you. And that changed Mr. Abel's mind about being truthful and saying, okay, I've got two guns on me. But he hadn't moved towards them. He hadn't laid a hand on them. He hadn't done anything else but said, do you have guns? And I will search you. And I suggest that is not a seizure. That is not something that needs reasonable, articulable suspicion. Now, if he had taken that next step without Mr. Abel saying, I do actually have guns on me, then we're in a much, I think we're in a different situation. I think does that, he, that we might.
Does he actually move toward the defendant as if to conduct the pat down, but before his hands are on him, the response is given?
And I watched it again. Mr. Abel is seated. He's kind of turned towards him, and it does not appear that he makes any real effort to move forward and pat him down or touch him or take him off the bike or do anything else. It happens so quickly because as soon as he says, I will pat you down, he says, you what? type thing. And he says, well, yeah, I'll pat you down. And that's when Mr. Abel says, well, I do have a gun. And at first, the police officer doesn't understand what he said to him. He says, huh? And you know, the police officer says to him, huh? And he says, I do have a gun. Actually, I have two. I have one here and I have one here. Type situation. So I would suggest, Your Honor, that at that point, that he is taking what I would characterize and what I believe that the court could find under Robertson, what is a suitable measure for his safety, ensuring that before he turns his back, he is safe. And he did not lay hands on him. He did not actually do the pat down or anything until Mr. Abel actually said, I got guns.
Yeah, if it had been a grandmother on a motor scooter under the same facts, would his actions have been constitutional?
Well, I think that to the extent that I don't know that the Constitution requires that he have some other basis to even ask the question to ensure his own safety, it would be. If the court finds that there has to be some justification, and certainly these are difficult lines because they come about so quickly and you're trying to break apart these interactions. And for instance, in Murray, when the court just said you have to conduct your investigation reasonably, the grandmother on the motor scooter, probably one would say that's a less reasonable reaction to that person than the fact that in the back of his mind, yes, this may be somebody I have to ensure my safety, somebody I have to ensure doesn't have a gun before I turn my back on him. He knew a lot more, and there was a lot more going on. Instead, he had a Hell's Angel in front of him who said, I'm out on a run. Gang speak for, I'm engaged in business here. I'm engaged in gang business. He knows he's in enemy territory.
Focus, help me on this issue. Is it your position that if the admission of carrying weapons had not been made, that there was still a basis for a Terry pat-down? And if so, what particularized articulable facts supported that?
I would suggest that if there is a need to find a reasonable articulable suspicion, we have two motorcyclists who separate. The police officer says, that's different. He says that in his testimony. That's unusual. I am dealing with one on my own. I know that he is a member of the Hell's Angels. I know from my training and experience in this specific area that this is pagan territory and that people who are enemy motorcycle gang members are much more likely to be armed at that point. He knows that, in fact, Mr. Abel says to him, I am on a run. That is one of the phrases that he uses. And this officer knows on a run means, and if you look, that's stipulated to in pages A6 and A7, that on a run means you're doing gang business. And that that can involve violence and that can involve weapons.
Okay, so that, if I get your drift, it's that all of those facts that you just recited create a basis for reasonable, articulable suspicion that the motorcyclist has a gun.
May in fact be a weapon.
So to get back to Justice Ridgely's question, the police, the policeman asks, do you have a gun? The motorcyclist says no. At that point, you're, because the policeman is going to have to, at the very least, write out a ticket, but have to turn around, turn his back, get into the car, and thereby become vulnerable in the event that the motorcyclist does have a gun, he would be entitled to proceed to pat down the motorcyclist before doing that, even if there's no admission by the motorcyclist that he has a gun.
I believe all those other facts can add up to reasonable articulable suspicion that, in fact, this person may be armed and a danger to him. Yes.
You listed four. Are there any others?
Let me think. Enemy territory, knows his training and experience. Not that I can think of right off the top of my head right now, Your Honor. Other than the change in his demeanor, and there's question from defense as to whether or not he truly changed his demeanor, but the police officer is the one right there with him. And at first he's, you know, when he says, where are you going? And then he says, you know, look, we're just out on a ride, things like that. And he says, yeah, but that kind of where? And he says, look, I'm not going to go into all that with you. I think that is further evidence that he may be involved in activity that he doesn't want the police officer to know about. So that may also be one more factor, although how that, whether that adds upon the run statement or not, I'm not quite sure, but it certainly makes it more reasonable to the police officer that this isn't just a motorcyclist who happens to have a Hell's Angel jacket, but it's somebody who is engaged or potentially engaged in criminal activity that involves weapons, and that before I turn my back on him, I should be sure of that.
I'm not sure from your brief which legal compartment all of this goes into. There's a section of your brief that talks about search incident to a lawful arrest. But there was no arrest, no formal arrest in this case. And then the brief proceeds to talk about, proceeds to analyze it under a doctrine that seems to be closer to the facts of this case, and that is that this was basically a logical and justifiable extension of the original stop for speeding. Is that your
position? Yeah, and I apologize because of the way we wrote our brief, that the my position is that there really was no search of him, no separate seizure of him, until he put the hands on him and actually took guns from him. And that was the search I'm saying is incident to a lawful arrest, because by that point he certainly had probable cause. The man had told him, I got a gun here and I got a gun there. Mm-hmm. As we back into how does he get to that point, though, the question is, well, was he reasonable up to that point that admission is made? And our position is, yes, it was. Him requests, asking of him, do you have weapons, and ensuring, through saying, look, I'll bat you down, as to whether or not the guy was going to tell him or not, or whether he was going to have to be concerned about that or not, was all reasonable. It was a reasonable investigation in the terms of Murray or in the terms of Caldwell. It wasn't some, or the of Robertson. That it was a suitable measure for his own safety in those circumstances.
Are you asking us to approve a statement by an officer, I'm going to pat you down, when there's no, and then see what happens, when there's no basis to do a Terry pat down? Aren't there dangers in that?
Certainly there are dangers in that, Your Honor, but I would suggest that given the circumstances, we would approve it in this case. We're not asking for some blanket approval. Every case, as this court has said time and time again, when you're talking about the totality of the circumstances and the facts that are facing him at that point, it was a suitable measure because it was a much less dangerous circumstance than actually taking him off the, and certainly much more valid circumstance of keeping the temperature of the stop low rather than being more confrontational with him. You can see how he says it. I mean, he's professional. He's, he's no nonsense, but he's professional, and he's certainly not threatening or anything like that. In fact, Mr. Abel's like, well, no, type of thing. and quickly says, well, look, I got guns on me.
Well, I may not have your intonation exactly right, but I think I heard you say, the police officer said, look, I'll pat you down. In fact, according to the transcript, as I understand it, after he says, the police officer says, no guns, Abel replies, no, I'm good. Then the police officer says, all right, I'm going to pat you down. Make sure you don't have a gun on you.
Yes.
Is there a substantial difference between the way you phrased it and the literal wording of what the police officer said?
No, I obviously the literal wording is there, but I think that if you look at the interaction between the two, that it's not as a threat of activity, as more of a discussion of, look, I'm going to make sure here. And I think that you have to look at that.
It's more of a statement, I'm going to do it. And you infer largely because I don't believe what you said.
Right. But I think, again, the intonation and the way the police officer says it and the interaction there, I think, is important because it's reasonable in the way that he does it, as opposed to, look, if he had walked right up to this guy and said, you know what, he's a Hell's Angel on a bike, I'm going to take him down and threw him down on 95 and patted him down, you know, I wouldn't be here on appeal. But the state suggests that what he did was reasonable. It's not some secondary seizure. It's not those cases where a policeman unreasonably attenuates some stop, as the court just found in Murray, as the court found in Caldwell. Instead, he hadn't even finished what he was getting ready to do. He was trying to complete the business of the stop, but he wanted to make sure he did it in safety. And I suggest that it's a suitable measure, if we want to use the words of Robertson, for him to have done it the way that he did.
Do you want to say the balance of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Yeah. Good morning. When I speak to juries, I always like to start out with a proposition that everybody can agree upon in order to establish some medium of credibility. And I will do that here. And that medium will be, I will never know what it is like to be a Supreme Court justice. We all can agree on that. Having said that, if I were, I would have an overriding concern for not just what happened in this case, but the message that is being sent. And in this particular case, the executive branch just don't get it. It comes out in about two sentences in the transcript. And one of them is on A49, Appendix 49, where Officer Lloyd is questioned by the prosecutor. Have you had occasion to stop ones that maybe were addressed in intimidating garb? And by as an aside, the ones is talking about motorcyclists. And his answer is, I stopped numerous amounts of motorcycles. We have initiatives for motorcycles, hundreds. On the very next page, since this is pagan territory, the war zone that the state dramatizes, and I would ask how many arrests we've had recently for gang members fighting each other. In the 90s, that was something that I think we heard about, but that war is over. I think we're dealing with street gang kids and drugs. But nonetheless, the question was asked, and this is at A50, do you immediately go and pat down every pagan that you stop? And we have a very instructive answer about what the state thinks the law of Delaware should be. After communicating with them, I would pat down. I do pat them down if I would pat them down before I went back to my police car. And he says it depends on the situation to situation. He pats them down. What that means is in Delaware, if you are displaying motorcycle colors, there's a different rule for you. No, you're not going to be thrown down on the ground, and I think that was noble of the state to concede that they wouldn't be here appealing if it had been that crude and rough. This is a more subtle type of violation of one's rights. They're going to find a way, whatever it takes, when you're showing colors. Now, what is very interesting about this is Mr. Wallace's argument about going on a run. And on the one hand, he says, oh, that means it's dirty business. And on the other hand, the man is being evasive and won't even say where he's going because he doesn't want to disclose what he's up to. Kind of doesn't make sense. And this going on a run means dirty business based upon Lloyd's considerable experience with Hell's Angels. And there's one thing that I can say about Lloyd. He and I have the same experience with Hell's Angels. We've met one, Mr. Abel. So, I'm just as experienced as he is. I know as much about their credo, their business, as he does, which is zero, zero. He is catapulting from his pagan knowledge a suspicion that, oh, the Hell's Angels must be that way because all gang club members are alike. They all carry guns. They all are more likely to, or many are more likely to attack police officers. That is not a reasonable, particularized, objective basis for a seizure.
Well, you stipulated to what on a run means. Is that right?
When I just heard that here, I didn't realize I'd done that. I didn't look at my stipulation, and if I signed that, then I would have stipulated to it. So if I'm bound by whatever that means in Lloyd's mind, I suppose. Well, I am. If I signed that, I don't recall.
Well, if it means doing gang business.
Okay, then what is the gang business would be my next response.
And what's your answer?
Pardon me?
What is your answer? Based on
my answer is, I don't know.
Of the
I would have to speculate, and I think that in the context of a constitutional situation, that's not good enough. You got to know, what's gang business mean? What are you guys up to? I do know, actually saw it recently, the African-American gang call. So we have an African-American motorcycle gang in Wilmington, and when it was Memorial Day, they had a parade. And the city police had to block off as they were all on their motorcycles, and they took about 4 minutes going by my office. That was gang business that day, commemorating our dead. So I suspect that, like all other people, there can be bad gang business, there can be good gang business, but saying on a run doesn't mean, aha, that tells me this is bad. And wouldn't he be kind of stupid to say to a policeman, given the experiences that Abel has had, I don't want to go through that again, been there, done that, that he's going to say, oh, by the way, I'm doing some gang business. Don't you mess with me now. So I don't know what it means, and more importantly, the state doesn't know what it means. Lloyd didn't know what it means either. He decided, because he wanted to, use that as a bridge to have just another reason. And he didn't even point that out, by the way. This is the state's after the fact. Lloyd gave four reasons. Colors, demeanor. I got another. Let me check my notes. I had to write them down.
Well, before you get to that, yes. I've just wanted to explore what I thought was the implication of one of the of your comment that the trooper basically attributed to the Hell's Angels the violent propensities of the pagans.
Yes.
Do I properly conclude from that that if it had been a pagan that had been speeding and been stopped, that it would have been, there would have been no problem with asking about weapons?
No.
Or pat down?
No. Again, there would have to be a totality of circumstances. Then that would mean that I'm saying the dog whistle would be, as long as they're pagans and you know that pagans have a propensity for violence, regardless of what this individual is like, you can search all pagans. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it really gets a stretch when you say, I know what the pagans do. And this is, there's one pagan in one Hell's Angel in Delaware, he said, he thinks. There's one Hell's Angels in Delaware. Therefore, I conclude, I know what they do as well. That is just so, yeah, right, that no one can give that serious weight in terms of objective.
So your comment that there had been an unnecessary stretch or attribution to Hell's Angels of the purported propensities of the pagans was basically a bit hyperbolic.
It was a response to Mr. Wallace's argument that by my client saying, on a run, that's what he said, he pointed to that. That heightened the suspicion because he's doing, quote, gang business, close quote. If you don't know anything about the gang, then you can't conclude whatever gang business means. That's my point.
Well, why doesn't the admission of your client take this out of the circumstances that you're describing it, that we should be worried about, because your client actually admitted having weapons before he was touched.
At the end of the day, but they shouldn't have been in that situation. We have to step back in time, reset the clock about 10 seconds before that. I don't like dealing with seconds because that sounds so minimal. But we have to look as it goes forward at the moment that the police officer says, okay, when you say to somebody, I'm patting you down, you're seized. Make no mistake about that. It has nothing to do with hands. And the law is very clear on that. anything that would cause a reasonable person to know you ain't going anywhere, using street jargon. And he was seized then, so that's the point of analysis. Did the police officer have the right to say, you're seized now, what did I do? The four things that are pointed to, I now have them in front of me. One are the colors. Two is the demeanor, which consists of two things. The evasiveness in saying, we're on a run, we're on a road, we're on the road or whatever, and I don't want to get into all that. And third, that he's joking. And he says, hey, don't give me a ticket, let me go and I'm out of here now anyhow. And the police officer said, quote, I feel like he's trying to get away from me, close quote. And one can only imagine how many people are saying when they're in a speeding ticket situation, hey, let me go. And you saw the demeanor. It was a joke. It wasn't anything that any reasonable man can say, oh, there's something sinister in this. But when you're on a stretch, because we have our initiative for motorcycle guys that got colors on, it becomes something you can grab onto, however weakly and vainly. And the last was the motorcycle split, because they separated. And as I pointed out in my brief, they just stayed together, two on one, I'm scared. They separate, oh, I'm scared because that's not normal, whatever normal means. And that is so tenuous as to defy imagination that anyone would stand here and argue that that's a sound basis. Interestingly, the state makes an argument to bulky clothing. The police officer conceded. I didn't even catch that. So we have those four things. Colors, not wanting to go into where he's going, joking about, hey, let me go and I'm out of Delaware anyhow, and two independent motorcyclists doing two different things, and whether or not that gives a man of reasonable caution the right to say, you're not going anywhere until I'm done searching you. And I suggest it does not. As I pointed out in my closing remarks to...
Is it your position that everything that the officer did up until the point of asking whether the cyclist had a gun was constitutionally okay?
He had the right to ask him where he was going.
There
was
no right? He had no right?
Yeah, yes, he had the right under 1902.
Right.
And I'm assuming 1902 applies to a motor vehicle situation, although it's in Title 11. Okay. Under 1902, he did have the right to ask him that, and a person has the right to say, I'm not going to answer that. And then depending upon whether or not that is sinister or not, one could say, oh, that makes me really have pause. He has the right to ask for his identification, which was provided. He has the right to ask him where he was.
It sounds to me like the answer to my question is yes.
I'm sorry.
That everything the officer did up to the point of asking whether the cyclist had a weapon.
I'm not trying to belabor it. I'm trying to articulate so I don't say something wrong. Let me think a moment. Okay. Ask him that. That is correct. He had the right to do those things that are attendant to the normal prerogative that would occur be used by a police officer in stopping any motorist.
But from that point on, if he was to inquire in a way that's constitutionally proper whether this particular cyclist had a gun in his possession, what more would be required?
I don't think that, as I think about it, as you're standing there and you followed 1902, that the throwaway question, oh, by the way, you don't have any weapons, do you, is a no-no. That doesn't convert it into a seizure. No, okay. I don't. Okay, cool, and go on your business. It's at the point, he says, and now, and if Abel had said, yeah, I do, game's over.
Does it matter that it's redundant? He's already seized, wasn't he?
Well, it's a different kind of seizure.
How many kinds are there?
Well, the first time it was correct. Now we're into a different area, a seizure for a different reason that's not supported by particularized objective facts.
So your answer is he can go ahead and ask if he has a gun, but once he gets no for an answer, then we're in different territory?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
He can't say, are you kidding me?
Probably he could say, are you kidding me? But and there's not an additional seizure. That's part of the original seizure, and that's not so far afoot. A simple question is not so far.
And then he couldn't say, and what would be your answer if I were to suggest that I'm going to pat you down? Is that a no-no?
I don't know that. That didn't happen here. I don't have to reach that because what we do have is...
It arguably did happen. It just was phrased differently.
It didn't argue. Okay. Are you sure you don't? I'm going to pat you. The moment he says, I'm going to pat you down, a second seizure has kicked in, which has to be independently supported by objective facts.
And that is because?
Because that person knows we are now at a different We're in a different dimension. No longer are you going to get a ticket going your way.
Why are you in a different dimension?
Because you're going to be restrained and your body is going to be violated. And if we allow that to happen, why not just say, well, I'm going to do an internal examination of you now. You may have weapons here. You may have, gang business is drug business. We all know that gangs are involved in cocaine, used to be amphetamine. We all know that. Why not just do an internal there?
So at that point, if the officer is going to proceed, according to the way your side sees this case, there had to be an independent, articulable, reasonable suspicion that this biker had a gun in his possession.
That's what the law says, a reasonable and articulable suspicion to suspect that the officer or others may be in danger. State versus Henderson, your court, sir.
So that's the key issue from your standpoint. That's where the rubber hits the road.
That is correct. Thank you very much.
I would suggest that Justice Ridgely's question about, well, he's already seized, is where this case differs from so many that the defense would want the court to look at about motorcycle gangs, people being stopped, where they're just stopped simply because they're wearing colors. Those are most of the cases they cite. In this case, he was already subject to a valid seizure. And in fact, when he didn't tell his destination, arguably, under 1902, he could have been detained for 2 hours. Arguably, he could have been arrested under 701 for the mere speeding itself, because that's what the statute says. The question then becomes, and one of the things Mr. Hurley should have also admitted is, he's never been a police officer. He's never been a trooper. He's never had to stop somebody on the road and wonder whether he's going to go home that night. And maybe the trooper said it the best when he said at 8:45, you're talking about 40 or 50 seconds where I've got to decide my life. Is it a suitable measure for him in these circumstances to ask that question and to say to him, I'm going to check. And then Mr. Abel gives it up. Says, yeah, I got guns. The state suggests it is. Police officers should have that tool. We're not asking for some huge extension. We're not asking, and this isn't a case, where he starts some whole other investigation. It's pinpointed to one thing and one thing only, his safety. This isn't a hand him the ticket and then say, oh, by the way, got any guns or drugs on you? You mind if I check? It was wholly related to his safety before he turned his back, before he went back to that car.
Isn't that true of any stop, whether it's a motorcycle or not? I thought in your first argument you were making the distinction that this is different because the motorcycle's positioned differently than a car and it's more dangerous with the motorcycle. Is this the motorcycle exception that we're looking at here?
Because the
argument you're talking about could obtain where there's someone behind the wheel of a car who can easily open the car door and take action. Does that mean a police officer who testifies that I didn't like the looks of the individual, there's something about them that suggested I would be at risk if I walked back to my car to get my summons book and write a summons, or however it's done today?
Your Honor,
it's a very slippery slope in that respect, isn't it?
But this is always fact sensitive. The court said that. These questions are always fact sensitive, and under this set of facts, it was a suitable measure for Trooper Lloyd to ask that question and follow up. We're not asking for any further extension, and it need not be. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Please rise.